Welcome to
America's Cannabis Conversation,
where you can hear experts from all facets of the cannabis business as to what's happening in this exploding industry. Keep yourself informed. Join the conversation. Hello and welcome to America's Cannabis Conversation Quick News. I'm your host, Dan Perkins. Washington, D.C. The Multi-State Marijuana Regulators Association expands and sets policy priorities. An independent coalition of marijuana regulators from across the United States announced this past week that representatives from five more states will be joining its efforts to develop and share best practices for enacting reform. Additionally, the Cannabis Regulatory Association said it was establishing 15 special committees that will be tasked with collecting information and creating policy recommendations on a variety of issues related to marijuana. Regulators from Arizona, Connecticut, Florida, Georgia, and Montana will join members from the original 19 states that formed the Cannabis Association last month. Vice President Andrew Bistro, who also serves as the executive director of the Michigan Marijuana Regulatory Agency, said in a press release that the new member states experiencing regulating cannabis will significantly contribute to the CANA work of identifying and developing best practices that safeguard public health and safety and promote regulatory certainty for industry participants. Madison, Wisconsin. Wisconsin governor floats marijuana legalization in the 2021 budget to boost the economy. The governor of Wisconsin is thinking about adding marijuana legalization to his 2021 budget proposal as a means to boost tax revenue amid coronavirus pandemic. Speaking to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel in a recent interview, Governor Tony Evers said that the adult use language was on the table despite facing opposition from the legislature over more modest cannabis proposals in the past. While Evers attempted to get marijuana possession decriminalized and medical cannabis legalized through the budget process in 2019, Republican leaders in the legislature nixed those measures from final spending bills. There since has been an open question as to how the governor would navigate the issues this time around, but now he's indicating he may go bolder. Evers criticized the legislature for failing to act on a more incremental reform at the beginning of the year, citing overwhelming public support for medical cannabis legalization. When more than 80% of our states support medical marijuana and elected officials can ignore those numbers without consequences, something's wrong. Meanwhile, voters at the local level have been making their opinions clear on cannabis reform over the past few years. In three jurisdictions, they approved non-binding advisory questions in favor of marijuana legalization last year. That's after Wisconsinites across the state overwhelmingly embraced cannabis reform by supporting similar measures during the 2018 midterm elections. In another sign of the time, city officials in the state capitol voted last month to remove most local penalties for marijuana possession and consumption, effectively allowing cannabis to be used by all adults 18 and older. Trenton, New Jersey. New Jersey mayors surveyed about marijuana as the state prepares to implement legalization. A nonprofit marijuana policy group is distributing a survey to hundreds of New Jersey mayors in an effort to identify local concerns and challenges of regulating cannabis sales as the state works to implement legalization. The Cannabis Advisory Group announced the questionnaire on this past Wednesday, just 2 days before the voter-approved referendum legalized marijuana for adult use is set to become enacted as a constitutional amendment. The New Jersey State League of Municipalities is helping to facilitate the survey, which contains 27 questions that have been emailed to all 565 mayors in the state. They touch on issues such as cannabis business licensing allocation and penalties for unsanctioned marijuana consumption in public spaces. It's an exciting new landscape in New Jersey, but marijuana legalization also poses a lot of unknowns, particularly at the local level. The founding director, Farrow, said in a press release to help ensure the industry success, we felt it was important to gather comprehensive understanding of the concerns, questions, and predispositions of our municipalities. There are particular unknowns when it comes to the state's future recreational marijuana market, as legislatures have only recently approved implementation legislation following the November vote to legalize marijuana. The bill is currently sitting on Governor Phil Murphy's desk, but its signing has been delayed due to the governor's concerns about separate reform bill to decriminalize cannabis possession. And that's your American Cannabis Conversation Quick News. This is our first show in the new year, and we've got an exciting lineup, so let's see who's joining the conversation today. First up is Dr. Michael Lewis, who is an Army veteran who's been involved in infectious disease control for most of his adult life. Then we have Giada DiCarsi, who is the CEO and founder of New Frontier Data, one of our favorite companies who provides tremendous amount of research on the cannabis industry. Then we have Big Mike, the cannabis king out of California, who's going to talk about what's happening with his products and his outlook for the coming year. And last, fascinating conversation with Brett Zeidel, who's going to talk about his recent order that he got from the Canadian government to sell cannabis products through the medical marijuana facility directly to the patient without going through a dispensary. I'm Dan Perkins. Thanks for listening. And now let's join the conversation. Welcome back to the conversation. With me today is a very important person that I've just been introduced to, Dr. Michael Lewis. And he is kind of a renaissance person. He's a former military, he's a medical doctor, and he's done a lot of things, and he's doing a lot of things to do. So, Dr. Mike, welcome to the conversation.
Great to be with you today. My pleasure.
Thank you. So tell our audience about you. And I know that's tough for a lot of people to do, including yourself. But before we go there, just let me say one thing. As a fellow veteran, thank you for your service to our country and to our people.
Well, thank you as well. So the quick background, if you will, is I went to and graduated from U.S. Military Academy at West Point. Went out and played Army for a few years in infantry divisions in Korea and California. Spent plenty of time out in the field, and then decided that I'd always wanted to be a doctor when I grew up. My father was a small town general surgeon, and my mother was a nurse. So I went to Tulane Medical School on an Army scholarship, every intention of being a surgeon, and got assigned to the Pentagon to do some general practice time. And there I discovered nights and weekends and travel, and decided that I needed to take a different route, and went to Johns Hopkins University for a graduate degree, and then to Walter Reed Army Institute of Research, which is very focused on infectious diseases. And that's where I did my training in preventive medicine and public health. So my time at Johns Hopkins and at Walter Reed was really spent on international infectious disease and public health. While I was at Walter Reed, I created a system called the Essence System. It was an early warning syndromic surveillance system that's been used now for over 20 years, literally worldwide. Almost every health department in the United States uses it, Department of Defense and so on. A lot of the data you see on the news comes from the Essence System that is run pretty much by CDC at this point. So that would literally created it from scratch. My reward for that is I got to pick my assignment, and I went to Bangkok, Thailand, where I could truly do international infectious diseases. And so my job for a number of years was to run around Southeast Asia looking for new and interesting diseases, set up systems to figure out how to find them and track them, find partners. And I happened to be there during the time of SARS and bird flu. Did a number of different outbreak investigations, and you know, on the scale of thousands of people, for different types of diseases, and did a lot of work, you know, both with WHO and the UN, as well as government partners, non-government partners, and hospitals all throughout the region, and then. The Army and their wisdom said, all right, you got all this great experience, come back and teach medical students in Bethesda at the Military Medical School. So I, for years, ran the biostatistics and epidemiology programs for the medical students as well as the graduate school at the medical university right across the street from NIH. And when I retired, I've gone into a variety of different things. I got a small nonprofit focused on brain health and concussions. I still see some patients, got some office space, and I do a lot of consulting.
Busy guy. A genuine thank you for
fun.
Yeah, well, that's the most important thing. Are we enjoying what we're doing? Thank you so much for that terrific introduction. And I think it was important because so many times we watch television and we see somebody who's got a white coat on and we think what they're saying makes sense or is true. And I think it's caused an enormous amount of confusion
in the American people not knowing what to do. I want to ask you a question that I think is important that needs to be asked someone of your caliber. It seems to me, Doctor, that we have focused our public health on focusing on social distancing and masks and washing your hands. Now, I'm not saying that those aren't good things, although I can show you examples like in the state of California, where I wonder what's going on as it's now the epicenter, the largest country, the largest state in the union, and within the top 15 countries of the world, has an outbreak of tremendous effect in California. But my concern is, Doctor, that I don't think a lot of people understand that the solution to dealing with this comes through the immune system. And I don't think wearing a mask or washing your hands is going to do anything to specifically help reinforce an immune system that may be compromised or may be undernourished. What do you think?
Well, I agree. And, you know, there's a lot of nuances there, a lot of areas to play in, and you can guide me if you want. I'll go down a road or two. You know, I look at it as this is a respiratory virus, and coronaviruses have been around a long time, and you know, viruses have been around long before mankind. And they're going to be here long after we're gone. We're going to have to learn to coexist, not just with this virus, but just like we have with influenza and the next virus that comes along and the next virus and the next virus after that. We have to be able to coexist. And so we can't always engineer our way out of this. And we certainly cannot sanitize and isolate our way out of this. It's just, that's not how respiratory viruses work. So you're right. We need to, where the focus needs to be, and it's certainly not where it has been for the past year, is how do we keep our immune systems strong and healthy and exercise them? And so when you start to talk about that, you get vilified by the, you know, say the mainstream media or even your friends saying, you know, you're not taking it serious enough, that this is, yes, this is a serious virus. It is killing hundreds of thousands of people around the world. It's a serious virus, but we're not going to be able to sanitize our way out of this. It's just not going to be possible. And where we need to put a much greater focus on is on health. And we don't ever talk about health. And let me be clear about one thing here. Health is not just the absence of disease. Health is very, very different. And we focus on the disease, and yet we don't focus on our health. And so keeping our immune system strong takes a number of things. Number one, it takes exposures to exercise your immune system. Your immune system, if you're never exposed to anything, the first time you do get exposed to it, you're going to be out of luck. And so it's like a muscle. That's, you know, you've got to exercise your immune system. And the only way you can exercise your immune system is getting your hands dirty, getting, you know, letting the kids be outside playing in the dirt, not sanitizing our, you know, and everything. We, you know, 20 years ago, we talked about the concern of antimicrobial soap was causing antibiotic resistance in superbugs. Well, here we've got a superbug that we're now faced with, and the answer is not to try to avoid it, because eventually it's going to catch up with us. And while, you know, I'm hopeful that we get immune response with the vaccines and with exposures, in the meantime, people have got to take personal responsibility for their own health and keep their immune system strong, not just by running out and trying to be exposed to it, but the basics of diet and exercise, keeping your immune system strong by providing the substances that help your immune system stay strong, things like vitamin D and vitamin C and zinc and other things, and cutting back on the things that are hurting it, like all the artificial flavorings and colorings and sweeteners that we see from Diet Cokes and diet sodas and other things, and all the sugar that's in our diet. We've got a health crisis, and it's not about the virus. It's about our lack of decent, good health in America.
Well, Doctor, you know, I understand what you're saying, and I appreciate it. And I do think it's important for me to raise the issue that I want to raise right now, although some people listening to the program may be a little uncomfortable with it, but I think it has to be said. Most of the scientists, such as they are saying in order to turn the tide on coronavirus, we need a herd immunity of between 70 and 80% of the population. Now, we have blacks, Hispanics, and Native Americans who have been recently polled by Pew Research. And in the case of black Americans, only about 42% have indicated that they wanted to get the virus for various reasons. Some of them prejudice, some of them treatment under previous relationships with the pharmaceutical industry. My point is that the people of color tend to have a much higher mortality rate and infection rate than people who are white. And that's not saying that white is better than black or black is worse than white. It's a scientific fact that data points that to. And I wonder, Doctor, where does nutrition, where does strong immune systems play in minorities that seem to have a higher propensity to be infected and die?
Well, there's a couple of things here. I mean, historically, we have been horrible. And if you want to put it, I'm not even sure what the best word would be. I mean, you look at the Tuskegee syphilis experiments back, decades and decades ago. You look at what we did to the American Indians. Why, yes, there's absolutely every reason why those segments of our society should have a mistrust of the government, because the government literally used them as guinea pigs over centuries. And so that's a lot of mistrust that's going to have to be overcome. There's some scientific side of things as well. People have less ability to convert the sun into vitamin D. So they need to have higher amounts of vitamin D to keep their consuming to be able to overcome a lot of the issues with the dark skin and its ability to absorb the sun. So there's scientific reasons behind it as well. There's a lot of sociologic reasons in addition. We hear every once in a while about food deserts. And, if there's rioting and, in, say, a segment of a city and they destroy the grocery stores and pharmaceutical or the pharmacies and other stores in the area, I mean, why would you go back and reopen those grocery stores if it's just going to get torn down? I mean, so, there's some sayings that come to mind, when we talk about that, that are probably a little more not appropriate for radio. But, and having spent time in the military, you can probably think of a few yourself. But,
yeah.
You destroyed your own neighborhood, and now now you're a food desert because no grocery store is going to come back in,
right.
and want to have a store in that area. So
you
don't destroy your own neighborhood. I mean, that's just the stupidity of rioting.
Right.
I kind of think back to some of the, Martin Luther King Jr. If you look back at it, there was no rioting. That wasn't rioting. It was, it was defiance. It was nonviolence. And that's the way you change the world. You don't change the world by breaking into a Best Buy and stealing a 60-inch television. That's
right.
Not going to change anything. You don't eat your dinner in an outhouse, if you will. That's probably
right,
putting
right.
it the nicest way.
Yeah.
So
Doctor,
there's lots of reasons, whether it's sociologic or historical.
Right. Doctor, unfortunately, we're out of time. Please tell our audience how they can follow you and what you're doing and your writings.
Well, a couple of places. When I retired from the military, I created a small nonprofit, and the website for that is brainhealtheducation.org. That's brainhealtheducation.org. And for people that are more into YouTube videos, go to YouTube and look up CV Sciences YouTube channel. C as in Charlie, V as in Victor, CV Sciences YouTube channel. Lots of great information on how to keep your immune system healthy and strong.
Doctor, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure.
You're listening to America's Cannabis Conversation on W420RadioNetwork.com. Your new cannabis electronic checking account can offer you PIN secure credit and debit cards for your clients. We can place a cashless ATM at your checkout counter, which reduces the amount of cash on hand. Did you know that we can help you bring legacy cash into your new cannabis electronic checking account? No more paying with cash. Making payments with your electronic check is safe and secure. So if you find yourself up at night worrying about somebody breaking in and stealing your cash, consider a cannabis electronic checking account. To find out if a cannabis electronic checking account is right for you, call 888-420-8884 and ask for Dan Perkins. That's 888-420-8844. You're listening to America's Cannabis Conversation on the W420 Radio Network.
Welcome back to the conversation. And this time, we're coming to you from Italy with Gina DiCarsa.
A young woman who I have spent a little bit of time talking to. I've heard a lot about her, Gina DiCarsa. And she is the CEO of New Frontier Data. That name probably rings a bell with a lot of you listeners because we've had some of her exceptional talent on the show several times. But now we've gone all the way to the top and we're going to find out where this company came from and how it exploded onto the scene and where it's going. So welcome to our show.
Thank you so much, Dan. It's a pleasure to be on your show. I'm a fan, huge fan.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Tell us how you came up with the idea of New Frontier Data. And let's, before you get there, just to give the audience a little taste, what is it that your company does? And why do I like them so much?
Well, thank you. New Frontier Data is at its core a big data company that solely focuses on the legal cannabis market globally. What that means is that we collect and report data across the world on the cannabis industry. The mission is really to elevate the discussion around this industry through the reporting of facts. So completely unbiased and objective reporting. The data that we provide is anywhere from raw to studies and assessments to via our online platform where we provide actionable intelligence and benchmarks. But in essence, we are a company that deals with data in the cannabis.
What fascinated me when I first started, and John was my first interview with your company from Kenya, I think he was when we were talking, he was there taking care of his parents because he was concerned about COVID-19. But showing the diversity of the communications technology, he was able to join me just like you have from Europe. But and I said this to you privately, but I'll say it to the audience publicly. As a collective group of people that I've interviewed so far, your people are absolutely professional. They're very articulate. They speak in English, which is very important to my audience and to me about a very important subject. So you start this business. When did it start?
I founded it in 2014. And thank you for the kind words on the talent, by the way. I will say that I always mention that the success of New Frontier Data and my success is in huge part due to the wonderful talent that surrounds me. So thank you for that. But yes, I founded the company in 2014, quite the critical time, given that it was right after California and Colorado had become legal, and there were eight states on the ballots that were about to go legal. So just about a year later, another eight states legalized, and Colorado was just becoming recreational. So they had just passed adult too.
So you know, it's amazing to me. I have interviewed a lot of people in this industry, probably more than anybody else in this industry in the last year and a half. But what I find is I've been in investments for 50 years. I'm 75 years of age. I've been managing money a long time, both individually and institutionally. I'm amazed that this business has survived in the United States, given the tax code of the difficulties it is to operate a business profitably. And yet this business is going to grow 40% this year. And with more states coming on with legislation in November, we'll probably see 40% or more going forward. But a lot of people are still skeptical about the viability of this business surviving longer term. What do you think about that?
When you say the business, you mean New Frontier Data, or you mean the cannabis industry in general?
Cannabis industry.
So it's an excellent question. It really, from an investment perspective, and may I just put out there that we do not give financial advice and investment advice. We cannot do that. We just report on the industry from a macro and micro perspective, so I can give you data. But two things happened this year that would support the fact that this industry is indeed booming and will continue to grow, and certainly will provide an environment for profit, for profitability for many, many verticals, and certainly for many investors investing in those verticals. Demand for cannabis in 2020 is skyrocketed. One thing that was a surprise to many of us is that it truly became sort of that essential, one of those essential businesses. Right. Historically, when we've seen economic downturn, we have seen few verticals that truly benefit, and they tended to be chocolate, condoms, and alcohol, and to some degree, tobacco. And now you can add cannabis to that, which is sort of interesting. So from demand perspective alone, even during a time of economic downturn, so this is a very solid industry based on very solid demand and consumption. The average cart of the average size cart, online cart, went up $150 per month per user during the first 6 months after, so from March to sort of October. So that's pretty incredible growth. So that's number one. Number two, we are beginning now to see the entrance of very mature players, for lack of a better term. So the last 3 years, we've begun to saw interest from, of course, pharmaceutical, alcohol, and tobacco. But what we're beginning to see now is the entrance of food and beverage, health and beauty. And what the operators in those verticals bring to bear is a level of maturity and sophistication in terms of how to grow a business that would further foster sort of this idea of success and profitability of and growth of the industry as a whole and business within it. 2 years ago, in 2018 and 2019, one of the things that we began to saw that drove sort of this trend of consolidation that we talked about in many of our studies was that the early entrance to the industry, the mom and pops, for lack of a better term, the smaller businesses that came in and sort of rolled up their sleeves and founded the industry through cultivation, processing, and retail, the smaller companies felt limited on how to grow and scale the business once the demand exploded. They either lacked the access to investment because of the limited sort of banking environment in the United States, or they lacked the know-how, experience, and skills to really understand how to grow and scale. So what we began to see is consolidation. So smaller companies coming together, mergers and acquisitions. But what we're seeing now is truly the entrance of very sophisticated, large institutions coming in and taking an interest, whether it is from an acquisition perspective, a partnership perspective, or a client perspective. We at New Frontier Data, for instance, now that we've launched the ad tech division, Nextech, which I'm sure Gary discussed with you in the past, we are beginning to deal with extremely large multinational consumer packaged goods companies that we never dreamed of connecting with 3 years ago. And with that, again, comes sort of talent, skill set, demand, money that also would, I would say, support the fact that this industry is certainly maturing and entering a new stage.
So let me ask you a global question. We've talked about the 28 on the show. We've talked about 280E and how it's affecting the ability of domestic businesses to be able to deduct the operating expenses like any other business could do. But if we set that aside, and from your global perspective, are the tax policies in other parts of the world as punitive as they are in the United States for marijuana companies?
The truth of the matter is that it's too early to even answer that question because, I mean, we've just seen. So first of all, there are about 60-something nations, something 60, between 65 and 68 at this point, nations around the world that have either legalized or decriminalized use of cannabis, primarily for medical use. There are very few. There's only a handful of nations that have legalized for adult use. Amongst those, the maturity of the industry, sort of the ability to having given out licenses and to have the industries really truly operate in a manner where you would be able to assess how the impact of the tax structure is almost non-existent, right? We can look at places like Canada, we can look at places like Australia to some degree, we can look at Germany, but I would say it's relatively early. Overall, to give you something that an answer that would be statistically meaningful, which is what we usually do. However, from an observational perspective, I would say yes. In most nations right now, the tax structure continues to be suboptimal to truly foster balance in terms of allowing the operator to be profitable. However, in the United States, the 280E, I would say, is relatively more punitive than in other places. So the inability to take advantage of tax exemptions that are allowed and by any business is something that we have not found anywhere else. So there are some challenges in the United States that are relatively greater. Does that answer your question?
And in addition to 280E, the banking system not being able to, the operators to get lines of credit, SBA loans and all those kinds of things, those are all prohibited, which is, we'll talk about that in our next segment when we talk about the impact of what the UN did when they basically took it off of Schedule 4. We've got 1 minute left. So where do you see your company going over the next 5 years?
So when we started in 2014, and because of my banking and sort of more finance-driven background, we looked at our big data capability as really targeting or supporting the financial markets. So and you know, financial stakeholders and those serving financial stakeholders. So investors, hedge funds, family offices, the Bloombergs of the world, investment banks and consultants. Recently, because of the entrance of these large CPGs across health and beauty and food and beverage, we saw an opportunity to repackage, repurpose the big data that we are collecting to serve the advertisement space. And we launched an ad tech division next. In terms of where we see ourselves in the future, I mean, for 2021, it's really a matter of solidifying sort of our ad tech division as the new division in addition to the fintech division, and then to really enter and weave ourselves into the cannabis market in Europe. So that's where we see ourselves in the near future. Where we see ourselves in the longer term, I think that I'm going to keep that to myself until we come up with our strategic plan in 2021. But I would say with a global position as the nexus of data. If you need data, we want to be able to provide it to you. If you have data, we want to have it.
I would say that I have obviously spent a lot of time doing research, and I have not found an organization yet that is comparable to yours in terms of providing a wide variety of data. So I always look forward to the notes. So we're out of time, but I want you to tell the people how they can follow your company and find out what you're talking about.
Thank you so much, Dan. You can find out more about New Frontier Data at newfrontierdata.com, and you can follow us on Twitter and Facebook at New Frontier Data.
Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Dan.
So if you missed any of this interview with Giada De Corsa, you can go to w420radionetwork.com, go to the archive section, and click on this particular show. You can also listen to other people from her staff who've been on this program, and all the content is available free of charge. This is Dan Perkins. We'll be right back. Hello, this is Dan Perkins for your Songs and Stories for Soldiers, Veterans, Tip of the Day. Did you know the unemployment rate for veterans is 12.5%? Because of the pandemic, the number of homeless veterans is increasing rapidly. In fact, there are waiting lists at VA shelters for people to come. Many of the veterans who go to the homeless shelters find themselves without decent shoes to go out and apply for a job. They come to the VA and they get health care, clothing, food, but they can't get shoes and socks. That's why we started the program. We are in our fourth annual Shoes and Socks for Homeless Veterans Drive. If you want to help, go to songsandstoriesforsoldiers.us and click on the Amazon button where you can order shoes and socks that are sent directly to me, and I will deliver them to the VA facility so veterans will get shoes and socks. That's songsandstoriesforsoldiers.us, Amazon button. This is Dan Perkins for your Veterans Tip of the Day.
Welcome back to the conversation, and joining us today is an important guest to me, gentleman who was on my first show, and he's been on a couple of other times, and we wanted to talk because he knows so much about what's going on in the business. We had decided we would bring him on the show quarterly, and joining us today is the king of cannabis, Big Mike. How are you, sir, today?
Dan, I am doing wonderful. Thank you for having me on again today.
You're welcome. Let me say to you, starting off with this, I think, important question, especially your perspective. We have come through about a 30-day period that we've probably never seen in the history of the cannabis space. We had the Democrats pass in the House of Representatives the MORE Act on changes within the legalization of cannabis. We had five states that were not previously in the cannabis business have come on board. And then we had the United Nations pass a resolution to decriminalize cannabis in 60 countries. So we are going to talk today with you about your product line, but I want to ask you, I do want to hear about your product line, but as a person who's very much involved in the growing process, we're going to see a dramatic change in the growing and processing of cannabis on a global basis that we've never seen before. What challenges does that present to you as a leader in this industry in developing growing products?
Well, what is happening, you're right, is on a global, it's unprecedented on a global scale. It's never happened before in the history of America or the world with what's happening with cannabis. And part of that is being fueled by the COVID epidemic that's going on globally. People are being told to stay indoors, to self-quarantine or to quarantine. They're not able to do their jobs, and they're not able to lead their normal lives, and it's causing them a lot of stress and depression and anxiety, and that is being relieved with cannabis, which is a very, very safe medication to use. And it's just opened a whole new door of medicine globally, and people are just consuming like crazy. What does that mean for us? I can't even keep up with the demand. I just put in $8 million worth of upgrades and continuing to make upgrades to meet that global demand. I'm building a new production facility in Barcelona, Spain. It's not just America. It's the same thing in Europe. Its sales have just gone through the roof with cannabis, and there's more people using cannabis than ever before. I don't see it stopping anytime soon. The growth of the cannabis industry is at this warp speed is probably going to go on for another 4 to 5 years. And I say that because we're probably going to be in the worst economic downturn that I've seen since I've been alive. And that is going to go on. That's probably going to, you're not really going to feel the impact of that until 2022, right around there. And the last depression took about 5 years to get out of. I don't know how long it'll take to get out of this one, this economic crisis we're in. So the growth of the cannabis sector is going to be enormous over the next 4 to 5 years.
Yeah. The thing that fascinates me, Mike, again, this is where I want to talk about your products. There is a whole new group of people because of the wide expansion that happened in the votes here in the United States. And in Europe, there's a wide number of people, a huge number of people, who are not in the cannabis space as investors or growers or whatever, who are now now looking at what's going on and are thinking about they want to get in this business. And you know, you talked about your business going crazy. My business, my network has gone from is more than doubled to almost 1.8 million and counting.
Wow.
Listeners on a monthly basis. They're the largest
show
in the world on cannabis. Thank you. And continue to grow every month. But we've never really talked, and I think we should do it at this time because there are a lot of people that are interested in the business. A lot of them are interested in growing, And I think it's time to let Big Mike talk about his products and what makes his different than everybody else. And then at the end, how do people get a hold of you to get the product? So tell our audience what you're doing in
sure.
Advanced Nutrients.
Sure. So Advanced Nutrients is a cannabis-specific fertilizer that we're a 22-year-old company. 16 of those years, we've had a license to research during, I call it the dark ages. There was only 3 licenses granted in the world at the time when I was studying cannabis. And I've based all my products on one thing and one thing only, optimizing that plant to its true genetic potential. When I first started, growers were getting about 3/4 of a pound per light. Now growers are getting over 4 pounds a light. And that's using wood advanced nutrients. Now, some of it's been, lighting technology, but most of it, I mean, they were using 1,000 watt high pressure sodium at 3/4 of a pound per light. We took them to over 2 pounds a light very, very quickly. We took the entire industry. And now, like I said, with the technology of the Philips double ended bulb and some of these LED lights that are out there, guys are hitting over 4 pounds per 1,000 watts.
So what is it? I don't want you to give away any trade secrets, but what I've been to your website numerous times.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a whole portfolio of products.
Are there
that many different growing mediums that you need to grow cannabis?
Well, our suite of products is like a toolbox. And if you're a beginner, we got things that are really easy for you, like our pH perfect products, where you don't need to buy all that fancy equipment and balance your pH. It does it automatically in the reservoir for you. We have products like Big Bud. So what we do is this toolbox allows the grower to basically manipulate the plant through all phases of its growing. You want to initiate a strong flowering response? We have Bud Igniter. You want the buds to get bigger? We have Big Bud. You want to take stress away from your plant and keep its genetic integrity longer and intact? We have B52. If you're at the last 2 weeks, we have a product called Overdrive. The last 2 weeks of flowering, it really packs on the weight because that's the time when the plant really puts on the most weight. Plus, we keep the genetic integrity of that plant intact for about 3 to 5 days longer. And that all adds to extra weight. It also gives higher cannabinoid profiles. So that means you get higher THC, higher CBD. There's just a suite of products that you can use that just enhance everything in that plant. We've got Voodoo Juice that will basically expand the root mass by up to 700%. Every university study has found that, and there's been hundreds of them, the bigger the root mass, the bigger the yield on top. And, so been doing this a long time, and I've figured out ways that a grower can optimize that plant through the vegetative cycle and through the flowering cycle.
Recently, I read a study that said that as we look back at the coronavirus, the demand for cannabis, and as you pointed out, has been very strong. But one of the things that I did read about was a tremendous increase in the demand for flower.
Yes.
Do you have a sense of why that's happening?
Well, the reason why I believe that the demand for flower is so big is because that's what people have been used to smoking for the last 50 years. They've been smoking flower, and that's what the community is used to. And it's the easiest thing for people to understand. You grab the flower, you roll a joint, and you smoke it. They are not educated. Oh, a lot of people are, but there's a large sector that just don't understand that there's vape pens, there's edibles, there's all these different topical ointments you can put on, tinctures. They're not aware of all the different products. So when they hear cannabis, the first thing that comes to their mind is what they were familiar with was showing, the flower. And it's true to its core, so to speak, because that's where this all started. And now with all the different ways of consuming and medicating your cannabis, it's opened up a lot of different variables.
So when you sell a fertilizer or a soil nutrient, did I understand you to say that you have a product that can increase the volume of the flower?
Oh yes, yeah. You get a heavier, denser, more compact, with more THC bud.
So I know there are people out there, as we talked about, there are people that are listening to the show who are thinking about getting in the business. And flower, as we just talked about, seem to be the obvious situation. But do other parts of the plant produce similar properties and similar benefits to the consumer?
Well, if you're looking for medication and you're looking for an outcome that's THC related, it's going to be one type of an outcome. Then you have now flower that produces just CBD, and you can consume that, and you're not going to have the same effects as if you consume THC.
And where does hemp fit into this equation? Do you supply growing media for hemp too?
Yes, we do. We've got a product for hemp as well, for CBD production, to enhance CBD production, and we also have one for textile production as well. So once you start talking about all the variables in hemp, the USDA hasn't come out with all their regs yet. The FDA has some today. In fact, the FTC is now cracking down on CBD claims that are going on right now. So there's this whole shifting sand, if you will, because we can take a hemp plant and we can make it so it just produces, let's say, THCV, which helps people lose weight. We could make the plant so it produces a lot of THCV, and people could use that for weight loss, or if they wanted, to increase CBD production or, CBC production. There's all these different cannabinoids, and you can now gene edit cannabis, hemp, or I say either the hemp or the CBD side or the THC side, which is psychoactive. You can manipulate that plant for different cannabinoid and terpenoid profiles. And for the listeners who are wondering what the hell I'm talking about, it's cannabinoids. I want you to think of a 747 plane, and you're flying in there, and those big four Rolls-Royce engines, those are the cannabinoids. Those are powering you. And the flight control system are the terpenoids or the terpenes, and that's going to direct what kind of an outcome or high you're going to have. So when you take those two and you kind of start studying it a little bit, you can then understand, based on your body and what it likes and what it responds to, these different types of profiles, and you'll know that these different strains or different products that people make have these certain profiles of cannabinoids and terpenoids that will give you this kind of an effect or outcome.
Now, you said, and we're almost out of time in the segment, but you said that you were opening up a facility in Barcelona?
Yes, yeah, production facility for advanced nutrients. That's correct.
Okay, and are you looking at other places to bring on board in other parts of the world?
In other parts of the country, we have another production facility going up in Las Vegas that is going to make just strictly powders. And the reason why we picked Las Vegas, it's has the lowest relative humidity in the United States, and the products that we make are what they call hygroscopic. They absorb water, so we want it just as dry as we possibly can, so we have a perfect pristine product going to the grower or the farmer every time.
If I recall, Mike, you told me that you've been doing this for 25 years.
I've been growing for 38 years and advanced nutrients for 22, yes.
Okay, all right. So you obviously have figured out a secret. What's the competitive environment look like for you?
I don't like to sound like I'm bragging here, but we're the number one cannabis fertilizer company in the planet. We're in 107 countries around the world, and you can put our next probably three competitors together, and they still will not equal our annual sales.
Unbelievable. With that, we're out of time for this segment, but I would like you, Mike, to tell people how they can learn about your products, how they get in touch with you, and buy your products.
Sure. It's really simple. Just go to advanced nutrients.com Or you can go to Instagram and just type in Big Mike, and you'll find me.
We have been having the pleasure to talk about his business, and that's the Mr. Cannabis Big Mike. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Dan.
America's newest and fastest growing cannabis-focused radio network is expanding across the country and looking to add to our sales and marketing team. America's Cannabis Conversation offers listeners insight and information on the exploding world of cannabis. It also gives advertisers the opportunity to reach a hyper-targeted audience, literally neighborhood by neighborhood, in markets all across the country. We're looking for a few motivated individuals that want to essentially run their own local business in markets like Boston, Las Vegas, Reno, Orlando, and more. To learn more about this exciting opportunity or to apply, visit americascannabisconversation.com.
Welcome back to the conversation, and we have a returning guest, Brent Settle. Brent, please tell me, how do you pronounce the company name?
We pronounce the company name Zayas, taken from two words, zygote, which is the definition for life beginning after fertilization, the first cell division, and us, mm-hmm. from the greater good. So Zayas, we put the two things together.
As I understand, if I read it correctly, you've been given the power from the Canadian Cannabis Control Commission to enter into a situation where you're going to be able to sell cannabis products under prescriptions directly to the prescription holder. Have I got that right?
That is correct. You got that right. So we've received our sales. Go ahead.
No, keep going.
So we've achieved what we got is from Health Canada is our sales license that allows us to sell direct to patients. And so once patients have received their prescription, they can then register with us online, and then everything is from there. And it's essentially like an online pharmacy. They can order our cannabis-based products, our oils in particular, and they can have them once they do it, just like an online purchase, then we can ship straight to their door anywhere in Canada.
So tell me if this is a wrong representation from my perspective. It appears that you are recreating the CVS, Walgreens, Rite Aid, whatever, online prescription service, but you're doing it with a controlled substance in Canada. And do you need a storefront to do that, or do you ship it from warehouse, or how do you process?
Yes, that's a great question, actually, Dan. No, we ship directly from our vault, our storage vault, directly to the patients. So we don't need a storefront. We don't need a physical presence for retail. We just ship direct to patient once they've registered with us. And so that means that they can go to, we have a .ca website set up, Zayas.ca. Mm-hmm. And once a patient, it's an age-gated website. Once they've go in there and they populate all the information, and we've got a confirmation from their physician, then they can order directly from us, and it can be shipped to their door.
I think the dispensary situation, and now you, with what you're doing, are changing dramatically the way we're going to buy cannabis products. And I think it's revolutionary what you're doing.
I think what's going to happen is that in managing for, you know, in this particular environment, is giving rise to, you know, the new ways in which we do commerce and we do activities. It just hasn't really made its way very strong into the pharmaceutical area, because it's, you know, we've got food that we can do this well, we've got other merchandise we can do this way, but the pharmaceuticals have always been tie-barred to a prescription and to a visit with the doctor. Well, I think the days mm-hmm. are coming when we'll have telehealth. Well, telehealth, you know, you'll have a visit with your doctor and everything will be done electronically, you know, and you maybe go to a lab to take an analysis. But after that, then everything can be done quickly that way without having to have the in-person visit. And particularly when it comes to managing something like a cannabis formulation, most people, you know, 58% of the people that we had previously were using cannabis-based products for managing chronic pain. and your listeners may know that there's a lot of chronic pain sufferers in the United States. So 40.5 million Americans suffer in severe chronic pain every day. So cannabis-based products tend to be really helpful in managing that. And that's what one of our objectives in this process is, to stick to the focus and our mission to try to alleviate human suffering. We're trying to bring science to bear on this. And this way, this first generation of products that we're doing, which is really an exempted market, is getting out there before it's an approved drug. But we are moving down the path with the preclinical trials. We've got 36 different preclinical trials going on right now around the world. And we're moving this thing through the FDA process. So we have true products that have a defined benefit or a defined management dosable amounts going forward. So this is the first generation, but we're really excited about the next generation of products that are coming.
So the delivery system is still highly restrictive in the United States, in the sense that it's regulated on a state basis, not regulated on a federal basis. What are your next thoughts with this model in Canada? What are you going to do next?
Well, I think the model is, we're rolling it out on a sort of a global basis. And right now, we are cutting our teeth in the Canadian market. And one of the things that was the hallmarks, and which is probably going to eventually show up in the United States, because we have federal approval for our products, that allowed us to get the online purchases through debit cards and credit cards. So now the we don't have to deal in cash. That's the other thing. So now mm-hmm. we have, because we've federally approved, now all those purchases are done normally the way that they do if they were buying something from Amazon or from wherever else online. They use the same payment process. And so we've been able to standardize it. So that once you get into this more standardized mode, it becomes more normal in terms of how they're approaching it. So then the next step for us is, now that we open up the channel, so to speak, is to increase the type of products that we have. So the first ones we have are oils that are the base of everything. Then we'll be moving into topicals, I would say early next year, within the third of the next year, into Q2 next year. And then we're going to be moving into gel caps right after that. And it's all going to be formulation-based. It's all going to be quality tested. And our goal and our is not ever to be out of product and not ever to have recalls. That's our goal and our commitment to make that happen.
So now, are you manufacturing, growing and manufacturing the product you sell? Or are you wholesaling?
No, what we do is we actually buy flower from approved licensed producers in Canada. So we have a set of growers that we actually then give them specifications that they have to hit, everything from not only cannabinoid profiles, but level of molds that are allowable or not allowable. We've got to make sure that we test for 107 different pesticides to make sure there are zero pesticides on it, and making sure the moisture is correct. So we buy the product. We use an ethanol extraction process to produce the oil. And then we have the oil, and then we blend it when it's all done as a concentrate. We blend it with an olive oil in order to have it as a final concentration. And so we get it into prescribed concentrations. The idea of the olive oil, though, is the reason we use olive oil is because it potentiates the CB2 receptor. And so we know that people who consume the olive oil are actually enhancing the ability for the products to work well as well. And also that olive oil has a very low allergenic reaction, meaning it's one of the few oils that has a very low response for people that have allergies against. And so that was the reason. And it has a long shelf life. You can hold it at room temperature for a very long time. And so that was why we chose that as a carrying oil for our products for consuming.
Tell people how they can find out information about your company. Can they look on the online store even though they're not in Canada?
It's age-gated, but they can go to Zias.com to begin with. That'll give them some general information. If they can get into Zias.ca, they can see. But if they have trouble, they can always call. There's a number there that they can call. And they're going to call us at the 833-713-CARE, which is 2273. And then we can try to get them connected if they want to see more.
Okay. And the website again, Brent?
It's Zias, it's spelled Zyus.com. And if they want to look into the actual product listings and so forth, get more information, it's azias.ca. And as long as they can get in there, they can do it. If they have trouble, they can always call the number and we can try to find a way to get them in.
Thank you for joining us today on this groundbreaking opportunity. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Thank you for taking part in America's Cannabis Conversation. To hear this show in its entirety or to hear any of our archive shows, log on to americascannabisconversation.com and tune in next Saturday at 4:20 p.m. for the next installment of America's Cannabis Conversation.
America's Cannabis Conversation.